This is Icon Art Radio, and I'm here, Bill Teeple, and I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, the usual hosts. But we have someone else here today. We have Joni McGinnis, who's, it's hard to describe what you are, but you're one of the first ladies of the arts of Fairfield, I think. Because I think of you in so many different contexts. Now she's laughing.
Thank you.
I don't know. I think of you in so many contexts here in Fairfield. You were an established watercolorist and well known, and everybody loved your watercolors, and many of them have them in their homes. Then you came and started studying art with me, and I don't know what happened there, but you changed.
Yes. Good thing.
I think I've done my thing on you, which is to expand you out of a comfort zone, but it might have been uncomfortable for a while.
Well, I'm always into reinventing myself, so you helped me. Guided me in a new direction.
Great. I don't know if I've ever talked about how much fun and what an enjoyment and a fulfillment in life teaching is for me, but you've been really fun to have as a student. But I think everyone needs to know that I've had a cold, so if I sound different than usual, that's what's going on. And if I start coughing
wildly, I have a cold
wildly,
too.
I have a cold, but it doesn't show.
Yeah. I have a cold, but it doesn't matter because I've never been on the talk show, so you won't know there's a different voice.
Now, if we keep talking like this, I'm going to forget what the question I was asking you.
We'll lose our entire audience.
I'm trying to think I've already done.
Okay. So you were talking about how you changed me. And I would say, yes, you helped me to get out of the what I would call a rut. Maybe it wasn't a rut, but I stayed with what I was comfortable with. After 20 years of painting watercolors, I just automatically did that for the first maybe 2 years, 3 years of painting with you. And you allowed me to do that, but you encouraged me to try new things within that medium. And then I don't know at what point I was inspired to try oil painting. I think it's when I learned that they had water-soluble oils and I didn't have to use turpentine. So I thought I'd try it. And immediately, for some reason, picked up the palette knife and started playing with that. And it was really fun. It was like sculpting a painting rather than what I was used to in watercolor. And then you've also influenced me with your love of modern art. So, more abstract. These paintings are much more abstract.
I think one of the most important things for us to embrace as artists and teachers is that we should never stop being beginners, and we should never stop being students. And I know there's people have even approached you and said, why are you taking lessons with Bill? You're already an accomplished artist. You don't need to study anymore. And I always get on people when they talk like that and say, we should always feel that we're beginners and there's always infinite amount to learn, and we can go on and on and on. And so it's good to find somebody to work with that'll kind of maybe been someplace that you haven't been. I mean, this relationship, we're always being teachers and students to each other, I think, constantly. And so someone who's been someplace you haven't quite been, then they can sort of point that out to you, and you can point places you've been out to them, and it's an ongoing process.
I agree. Some of the best-known musicians I've heard talk, such as Eric Clapton or Fleetwood Mac, and almost all of them universally say that they're constantly doing new things and trying new things. Otherwise, they get stale. And even though we think of them as these famous, incredible musicians, they don't really think of themselves that way. They are constantly learning new things, trying new things, and that's the ones that really endure for a lifetime and continue their craft.
I couldn't agree more. That's great.
You know, when you said you're an established, or Joni's an established artist, why do you have to be studying, you know, anymore? I was thinking the whole notion of studying just sounds so boring, and that what you're doing here and with Bill isn't, in a sense, studying at all. It's you're learning.
No, yeah.
But you're learning by doing something, and you're learning by opening yourself up to somebody else's sensibilities and insights and things.
Yeah.
And that's so different from what we normally mean by studying.
There is no studying art. No, and it's also being around the other artists.
Yeah.
Because you share and you see what they're doing, and they inspire you to do new things and try new things. And so it was a combination of being around Bill, but also all the other students. Because you're home alone in your studio, sometimes you can't get inspired, but you see someone else who has all this energy, and they're going, oh, look at this, you know, and they create something great. It sort of wears off on you, and you want to tap into that.
I always think of art classes as a joint project anyway, that the distinction, like Bill was saying, the distinction between teacher and student sort of dissolves as everybody's just participating in the creative energy that's going on in the room. Mm-hmm. And you never really know when somebody's going to come out with something that sparks the whole group or that sparks you specifically that day. And like you were saying, I think it's really important for any artist to break the boundaries of your own studio. It's important to have the alone time in your studio, but it's also important to be in these groups and classes, or to travel and take an art journal with you and that sort of thing, because completely different things come out of you. Not just you learning how to use oil paints instead of watercolors, but I'm sure also the kind of impulses that arose in you in this classroom were probably surprising a lot of times. Mm-hmm. What you wanted to do or what colors you wanted to work with or so forth probably surprised you as much as anybody else.
Right. And Bill, as soon as I took out the palette knife and started playing with that, and it was actually in one of my garden, we've had three or four of these garden workshops in the summer, and Bill came over to my house, and that's when I first used the palette knife, and he immediately just was so encouraging and so supportive of it that, you know, I didn't feel like, you know, it wasn't like someone saying, what are you doing? It was much more loving and supportive, and so I just kept going with it.
Another cool thing is the diversity. You know, everyone makes what they make uniquely. Just like your signature is absolutely unique, everyone's way of making marks and everyone's way of speaking visually with the art media is distinct to them. Now, we can learn how to paint paintings a certain way, but no two people will paint the same copy of a masterwork the same way, because there's differences, and so we celebrate the differences. That's one of the things that I like. So in the classroom, when you have six people, everything's going to be different, and so it's very inspiring. It expands boundaries because everyone is so different, and everyone gets to be exposed to each other's differences.
And I would say, Bill, that you are by far the best teacher I've ever had, and I've taken many different workshops and classes over the years. And usually they want to teach what they do, and that you end up copying sort of their style. You've never, ever done that. It's always been trying to find what it is that pulls us and our passion, and then encouraging that in any direction we want to go. And that, to me, is an enlightened teacher.
I guess it's the difference between teaching a technique of using tools and teaching a technique of using your own creativity, using yourself.
And Bill's very unique in that way. I haven't seen any other teaching method quite like it.
So. It's interesting to think that this kind of nurturing environment for creative expression would be rare.
I know, it is.
You'd think it would be the standard.
Yeah.
Well, there are, and I mean, in my art school days, there definitely were those intimidating teachers who just, you know, would blatantly tell you your work was outrageous or offensive or something like that just because it wasn't. I mean, even if it was somebody came in with a painting of beautiful flowers or something like that, and the teacher would say, "Ah, oh, I'm offended to even have that on the wall in this classroom because that person's taste thought flower paintings were schlocky or something like that and not really art." So it was very intimidating to have those kind of teachers, but there were always a few teachers whose you knew right from the start were trying to awaken you to your own creativity and all of that. And I was thinking, as you guys were talking before about experimenting and trying new things, that I love the way Matisse talked about his approach to art was discovering his own visual language, like writers who try to discover their own voice. You know, there's the visual language of an artist can be their particular style of brush strokes or can be the kind of composition that they tend to work with or color relationships or whatever. But as you begin to awaken, I'm sure you've noticed this in your progress as an artist, you begin to feel that happening and you begin to repeat things in new ways. So does that relate? I mean, can you relate to that at all? Is there any way that you could talk about your progress in terms of discovering your visual language?
I would say color has always been my way to express what I'm trying to say, and that being in the different vibrations and the emotions that color evokes. So over the years, I guess that's my language, is through my use of color and the combinations of color. As far as the technique, I don't know quite. That's a tough question.
Well, I'm always trying to find that. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the goal is for a person to be completely themselves mm-hmm. and to be able to speak what's in their heart through a language that I've taught them. So the first mm-hmm. thing is to teach them the language of visual expression. And you don't have to know a lot of, a French poet doesn't have to know a lot of English to like move us deeply with his English. So you don't have to know everything mm-hmm. to be able to be a poet of the arts. So mm-hmm. I teach enough language skills in the visual language. This isn't a verbal thing. This mm-hmm. is how to talk about the visual world inside ourselves in its own terms, you know, mm-hmm. with paint and form and color. Then the whole goal is to get the person to find themselves. Mm-hmm. And so the way of applying the medium and what you're saying and how true it is and meaningful it is to you is what we're after.
That's the main thing.
And so with you, I saw this palette knife thing, because you were kind of struggling with oil painting at first, because you were trying to do something that wasn't of your nature. Mm-hmm. But when you grabbed that palette knife, I thought, aha, here's where she can translate that spontaneity and color sense that you brought to watercolor to the oil medium. And mm-hmm. so that was a clue and that was a key. And I think that's kind of what she's talking about.
Finding
your voice and your means of expression.
That must be it, is the palette knife allowed me to quickly render something without getting all caught up in the detail. And that's what I liked about watercolor. I never did realism with watercolor. It was always letting the water flow and see what happened. And that's what I find in the palette knife painting, is the oil paint glides on and I glob it on with other colors and see how that works, and then put something else on top of it, and pretty soon I'd be part of the painting and it becomes more like poetry to me. So I guess that's...
I mean, your style is very spontaneous, you know. She's not going to plan it all out and do several studies in advance and do some drawings, and it's not your thing. Mm-mm. You love color and you love paint, and you have to have a style and a way of working with media that allows you to be yourself.
And I've
to
never
love
had,
what you love.
Right, and I've never had the patience to spend hours, days, months, years on one single painting, because I lose my inspiration. So most of my paintings I finish in 3 hours. And that's why I guess the palette knife worked for me, because you don't really... Being that it's a palette knife and you can't do real detailed work with it, you pretty much have to put it on and go and see where, you know, hopefully you end up with something after a few hours. So I don't know if that answered your question, but...
Yeah, that did. Do you work in different sizes? I mean, did you find when you shifted from watercolor to oils, that you wanted to work bigger or?
Because of the cost of oil paintings, oil paints, they're a lot more expensive than watercolor. I started small. Mm. It's easier to paint a small painting than a really large painting. Mm-hmm. I've gradually gotten bigger, but I don't know. Have to try that. Have to try doing a really
with
large
a giant
painting.
Palette knife.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking you could get a trowel and do a really big canvas.
But yeah, well, that's true. The cost of the paint would be.
Yeah, it is. That was the beginning. I had purchased some oil paints and a few canvases just to see if I liked it. Wasn't sure I would. And so.
Now, I'm sorry, I'm going to ask you this question because mm-hmm. I'm not sure you'll like the question, but this is my curiosity level is, mm-hmm. and I always ask any guest on the show this question, when did you start doing art when you were a child, or what kind of art did you do as a child, or how did your creativity sort of play itself out when you were little?
Well, yes, I did always love art. It's my favorite class in school. I actually have memories of finger painting in kindergarten, vivid memories of the colors. I was fascinated. All they had was red, yellow, and blue. But I actually remember mixing them with my finger and making new colors. And I had this bizarre thought once, and I don't know why, but I said, what if there's a color that God has not invented yet? Could I actually make a color that no one knows? Now that's pretty weird when you're five.
Very so postmodern.
I must have had something going there. And so then another favorite thing in grade school, they used to have this thing about once or twice a year where a visiting art teacher would come in and they had this contest where they would play classical music which had no singing or words. So we would not be able to be told what the song was about or what the theme was or who the artist was or composer, and they would play it for us, and from that music we were supposed to create a piece of artwork. And then so that I just looked forward to for 6 months every year to this contest, and loved listening to the music and trying to conjure up some image. And but then I guess when I got in high school, it's when I got more serious about art. It's when I took up watercolor. Also did commercial art, jewelry making, watercolor painting 1 and 2. They had quite a few offerings. And also I played the violin for about 10 or 12 years and had actually an opportunity to get a scholarship to continue on with my violin, but I really wanted to go with the visual arts. And I wasn't as good at the visual, had become a pretty accomplished musician, but it just didn't pull me. So I continued that and have for the rest of my life.
And you persevered even though you got some.
Well, I told Bill once, I had this teacher in my watercolor class who one day I went up and I was really struggling because watercolor is one of the most difficult mediums. And it's hard to control. And she didn't give us much guidance on the technique, so I was just playing around with it, and I showed her what I had done, and I said, what do you think? And she said, oh, she said, give up art. You're never going to be any good at art. She said, stick with the violin. And it just broke my heart.
Oh, it's terrible.
My heart. I thought, that is just the meanest thing anyone could ever say. But it prompted me to show her that if I wanted to do it, I'll practice forever until I can do this watercolor thing.
So, but you had a strong constitution. Some people would have just given up at that moment.
Yeah, I was a little crushed, but I didn't care because there was such a desire to do it.
Well, and her saying that made you realize how much you wanted to do it, too.
That's right.
I think
it clarified
there's
that.
There's a value in those kind of things. It's sort of like when you can't make a decision and you flip a coin, the value of flipping a coin is to discover what you really wanted all along because your reaction shows
right.
that.
And I wasn't sure, you know, my dad, being the practical one, said, you know, how are you ever going to make a living at art? Why would you want to do that? You need to have something to back up. You need to do something else, something practical. But the only thing that ever pulled me was being an artist. That was the only thing that I thought I would want to get up every morning and go do. So.
Do you still ever play the violin?
I don't. I haven't picked it up for probably, I tried once again maybe in my 20s, and again it just didn't pull me. So I have two violins actually in my basement if anybody wants one.
I would love to borrow one.
Would you?
Yeah.
Sure.
I bought a violin a few years ago, it was like 2003, 2004, something like that, because I love jazz violin so much, I just wanted to see if I could play it. But I discovered you can't actually begin violin in your 50s because my wrist was just not flexible
enough.
It
does take quite a bit.
And I actually was very good at hearing music and being able to get the notes to come out right and, you know, get the feeling of the jazz violin, but my wrist just couldn't, you know.
But you know, you could hold it the way they do in other contexts. I mean, holding it under your chin is only one way.
Oh.
In India, they hold it like a cello.
Uh-huh.
And in the Appalachian, you know, bluegrass bands, they often hold it on their hip.
You do have to have the wrist, though.
Well, but it doesn't have to be quite as convoluted as it is under your chin.
Yeah. Anyway, I gave my violin to my son, who promptly taught himself how to play it and traveled around the world with it, playing on the street and supporting his trip.
Wonderful.
So it had a good life.
My niece actually plays the violin, and I don't know where that came from. I never encouraged it, but she told me recently she hopes to go on and continue to play it in college and major in music. So, you know, that's good to hear. Somebody does it.
Well, you've always had a love of music, and you still do.
Oh, I love music. I just don't want to play it.
Yeah.
It's more mathematical to me. It wasn't the same part of my brain that does the visual, the paintings.
However, you combine them, because I think it's fascinating that your favorite assignment when you were a kid was when they played music and then you had to do a visual. Because people, you know, Kandinsky was one of the most famous examples of a visual artist who really wanted to get music, like his relationship to music in a visual language, and was very successful at it. So do you still ever do that?
All the time.
Like put music on and play.
Absolutely.
And paint.
I listen to my iPod during class, and sometimes, unbeknownst to me, I'm actually singing along and they're all laughing at me.
That's right.
Bilbo will attest to that. He said I sounded like a sick seagull one time.
What's interesting, I mean, colors, the color side of art expression is the feeling side, and it's very musical. It's very related to a musical feeling we have inside. But the kind of art you gravitated towards is the kind that you can let the feeling of color and that sort of musical harmonies of color move through your hands without the mathematical. We've left that nitpicky little stuff
behind.
Well,
and my favorite is jazz, and so Miles Davis is very spontaneous, and it isn't like listening to Tchaikovsky or Beethoven. It's much more, something about it grabs my soul, and then it helps me get a little bit of a jump start when I'm painting, especially after a long day of work. I come in the evenings, and I'll turn on some jazz, and all of a sudden I'm in a totally good mood, ready to paint. So it helps that way.
Yes, it's been interesting with the effect of different kinds of music. Sometimes if I'm traveling in my car and I'm kind of bored and there's no particular radio station that's really capturing my interest at the moment, I'll do this experiment where I'll pretend that I'm in a movie driving my car through this landscape, and then I'll switch the radio station and that's the soundtrack of the movie. So if it's a classical soundtrack, I will feel completely different. It's a different kind of movie I'm in. The whole storyline is, I should switch over to country music, and it's a completely different movie. It's a very entertaining thing to do. It makes you realize the power of music.
I always used music as a sort of a mood management tool when I was a kid, especially when I was a teenager, and I'd get depressed and feeling, you know, out of it and alienated by the world, and I'd just go play some Miles Davis or you know, the Kingston Trio or practically anything, and it would just take my entire persona and replace it with a different, you know, a different worldview. And it would do that within, you know, 10 seconds of starting to listen to the music. It's amazing how powerful something like that can be.
Before we're getting to the end of the show, before we finish, I just want to remind the listening audience we've been talking to with Joni McGinnis today about her experience taking, as a painter for really her whole life, and currently taking art classes with Bill Teeple. And do you have any particular direction you're interested in now that it's the new year? Any kind of goals you have for your art?
I think I'm going to continue with the oil painting. Every time I pull out my watercolors, everyone in class says, "Oh no, she's going back to watercolor." And I just do it every so often. But no, I'm going to continue with the oil, and hopefully Bill will inspire many more directions. I'm sure he will.
So I might mention that Joni has some paintings on view at the Small Works Show, which continues. Oh, wait.
It's when over is, on
when
the 7th.
When are we going to be broadcasting, I'm afraid?
It's over on the 7th.
The 7th.
Yes, this will be airing next Sunday.
So they still will have time.
You'll have time to see it. And I might mention that the Large Works Show at ICON is on through January 17th. So if you haven't seen either show, come out and see them.
And or sign up for classes with Bill. We have room on Monday nights or Tuesday nights, and we'd love to have you join us, no matter whether you've never painted or you're an accomplished painter. We would enjoy your company.
Okay, well, we're not really supposed to do advertisements on the air.
Oh, oops, I'm sorry.
So. Well, spontaneous ones from guests are perfectly, all right.
A marketing move. It was just an encouraging, friendly thing.
Well, it's really fun to have you join us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to ICON Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.